Everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh. You may be listening to this on Patreon 24 hours early. If you're not, get over to Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, where you can hear this earlier. I'm here with Finn Martin, my good, long, close personal friend, as Gene O'Callaghan would say. Hi, Finn. How are you?
Very well, Kenny. Very well indeed. How are you?
I'm good. I went to my personal trainer, and I'm now down 18 pounds.
Really?
From 5 months ago, which is good. And it's just that real fight to not eat chips, you know? It's the real struggle to not eat chips because I love them so much.
But you're at that dangerous age now, Kenny, aren't you? Coming up to 40, you know, where
fuck
it's
off. When did this come? I'm 32, you prick. Oh,
okay. No, but seriously, you'll have noticed as you get older, you have to work a little bit harder at this fitness thing, you know, and you can't get away with just eating what you want all the time.
Well, that's the thing, because I knew when I turned 30 and stuff that if I don't make a change now, like I'm going to get to like 40 and be like, oh God, I just didn't do anything. You know, I should have done something before. So I'm trying though. I'm trying to make an effort. So,
Well, it sounds like you succeeded.
The thing I want to open the show with is, I'm not apologizing because there's nothing we could have done about it, but I do feel bad for everybody last week because I thought we had a really great podcast last week and really fun and really strong. And then as soon as we put it out on the main feed or the same day, the news breaks that Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt are not going to be a part of TLC. Kurt Angle is going to be drafted in for an in-ring return. I know David and I ended up doing an emergency podcast on Patreon about the situation. So, Finn and I wish that we'd been able to cover that. We wish that maybe it had broken before we went on air. But, you know, these things happen. There's not much you can do about it. But
absolutely. There is nothing you can do about it. And that's that, you know.
So. Yeah. But I think that, it's certainly given us a lot to talk about this week. So,
certainly has, yes.
So, I think that... obviously the Kurt Angle thing just blew things up. So I guess, first of all, before we talk about TLC, a ton to talk about this week with TLC, Impact with Jeff Jarrett, lots of WWE news, some Ring of Honor stuff. But kicking off, when you read or heard that Kurt Angle was going to be the replacement for Roman Reigns in the main event, Shield versus Miz, The Bar, Braun and Kane, how did you feel about Kurt as a replacement?
Well, I mean, it was a very divisive issue, wasn't it, Kenny? To use a term that's used in politics a lot. Lots of people were saying this is fantastic, and other people were saying this makes no sense at all. And everyone was right. In a sense, it made no sense. But my take on it was that WWE was put in a very difficult position by something that was circumstances which were beyond its control. And it responded by delivering something that was as good or better than what was previously advertised by adding Kurt Angle to the match and bringing in AJ Styles as a replacement for Sister Wyatt. So, I mean, to me, that was my initial reaction. And I was, it awoke memories. I wrote about this on Facebook. It awoke memories, Kenny, of the bad old days when the WWF would not even acknowledge that there had been a change until a pay-per-view began, would then go along the mystery partner route, really build it up throughout the show, and then wheel out Billy Gunn or Savio Vega.
Fucking Savio Vega. I mean, that's got to be the worst one, right? Because in your head you're thinking, is Sid coming back? Have they managed to lure Ric Flair out of the shackles of WCW? No, it's a fucking Buriqua.
Yeah, Savio Vega. So that's what they used to do. So
do you think it's maybe like, we're going to talk a little bit about WWE financials because you've got the info for us. But do you think there's part of it now where, like, you know, people are signed up to the network and they kind of have to hope, they kind of have to rely a little bit on the loyalty of that hardcore fan base to stay? And if you give them something shit when they're expecting this huge Shield reunion, you're maybe going to hurt some of that hardcore loyalty that you have.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, there was always that fear in the pay-per-view days of like, oh no, no one's going to order the next pay-per-view because that surprise was just such an anticlimax. But the idea would be that, well, the TV will be good enough that we'll be able to sell this next pay-per-view, and we won't pull a stunt like that again for quite a while. People have got quite short memories, so we'll get away with it. And oftentimes they did, not always, but oftentimes they did. So definitely now, yeah, they're a lot more conscious of that, because people have got a voice on social media and information is so much more easily accessible that people find out about these things, so they have to announce them. In the old days, in the 90s, unless you rang the wrestling hotlines or things like that, and there was very few people, well, some people, I was on the internet in the 90s, but not that many wrestling fans were.
Power Slam hotline, I used to call, you know, my mum, I don't know if I told you this, that my mum screamed at me one time because of you. Did I tell you this? When you, I'd phoned the Power Slam hotline, and it was like October of 98, and you told me that the Boss Man had returned in a taped Raw. And me and my friend were like, oh my god, the Boss Man's back? What's going on? And my mum was like, Kenneth, why have you spent £17 this month on phone calls? And I was like, I had to phone the Power Slam hotline, mum. I had to find out what was happening. And she was like, bastard.
Yeah, I can imagine I was very unpopular in the Macintosh household.
You were very, very popular with the kid. You know, my mum said to me last week, she said, are you still doing that podcast with the Power Slam man? I said, the Power Slam, you mean Finn? And she was like, yeah, him. And she was like, are you still doing that? I said, yeah. And she went, that's great, isn't it? I remember you used to be on the toilet reading the Power Slam magazine. I was like, I'm glad you have a good memory of it.
Well, you know, back in those days, if you rang the hotlines, maybe you'd find out about it, but that information wasn't as easily accessible as it is now. So yeah, they have to be a lot more upfront, I think, which is no bad thing at all, you know? So a lot of people felt that it didn't make any sense. I get that. I understand that. It didn't, but WWE was in a position, you know, of that was thrust upon it, and it felt like it had to really go above and beyond to make things right. And for that, I think the company should be, I think it should be applauded. In a sense, it was disappointing that Kurt Angle made his WWE in-ring return first match, as we know, in WWE since 2006, in a multi-man match. It would have been much better if it was part of a long-term storyline, a singles match, etc., etc. So it would have been preferable if it had gone that way, which was the plan all along. I think, I don't know who he's, there's talk that he's going to potentially wrestle Triple H at Royal Rumble or possibly WrestleMania. We know now the cat's out of the bag that he's going to wrestle at one of those events or perhaps both of those events. So in a sense, it was kind of disappointing that it was under these circumstances. But to me, I think WWE deserves a big, you know, pat on the back for going above and beyond and delivering, you know, better than what was previously advertised, or at least as good as what was previously advertised. The other problem as well, Kenny, and we talked about this before, is that WWE doesn't really have an abundance of big stars. So it was in a bind. Who else could it put in that match that was going to satisfy its audience? I mean, you could say maybe Brock Lesnar.
Who apparently they didn't even call, it's come out, they didn't even call Lesnar to come back to this. But I also think, you're right, they do deserve credit for what they did, but they also, I think, deserve a ton of credit for the amount of situations that went on. You know, you had the SmackDown tour in South America, where Kevin Owens had to go home because of a family situation, AJ Styles was ill on one of the nights, and then you've got this situation where, you know, they... Wyatt and Roman are out, so that's two of your biggest matches of the show are done, so you need to find replacements for those. They get AJ over from SmackDown, which then leaves the show in Chile without AJ or Kevin Owens, and then they fly Triple H over to do the show in Chile. So I really do think they deserve a lot of credit for how much they were able to think on their feet in both those situations, because you're right, there was a time before where I don't think that would have been anywhere near as well handled. So I think props for them for being able to really go above and beyond for both the fans in Chile and the fans at the pay-per-view.
Yeah, it's all about giving people value for money. And it, you know, in a sense, sometimes it does feel like, in fact, many times it feels like WWE is taking its fans for granted, certainly creatively. But in terms of replacements for performers who had to, you know, medically disqualified from performing or had to leave for personal reasons, they really stepped up here. That's my reaction from it. And really, I think that's my, here we are, we're recording on Thursday, several days on from TLC, and that's really my long-term reaction. I think that's the way I will look back on TLC, that WWE really stepped up and really tried to give its fans value for money. That's my going to be my lasting impression, my lasting memory of what they did. Even though it cocked up our podcast, Kenny.
Pricks. So, I, you know, you said before we came on air, and I thought it was a great point of like, TLC seems so long ago, and like, it doesn't seem like it's even, you know, there's so much that's happened since then. But let's touch on TLC. I think there's really just three things we want to touch on, is Asuka, AJ, and Finn in the main event. Let's start with Asuka. The debut of Asuka, very conflicted. Some people thought, you know, it was a good match. Other people thought it was the wrong way to debut Asuka. What was your opinion coming out of, let's kind of lump together her Sunday and Monday, because she had two matches with Emma. She's done a pay-per-view and a TV. Where do you see her? How do you feel the debut was handled?
I thought that they were a bit off at first in the match. So some of the exchanges were a bit dodgy. And the match to me seemed, in the first few minutes, I was thinking, oh, this isn't really going how I figured it would. And Emma had far more offense than I thought she would have, which I know has been a complaint of many. A lot of people think that Asuka should have come in and just smashed Emma, because Emma's been presented, depending on the week, as like tantamount to a jobber, and other times as somebody who's not in the same league as the other female performers, who's sort of scraped wins here and there and doesn't really deserve this spot. I felt that the match ended on a high note. I felt it had a strong ending. I felt that the submission win was the right thing. I felt that people were really into the match by the end. So that would be the, you know, the enduring memory of the match would be one that she has lived up to the hype. But I can certainly understand why people were mildly disappointed by the match, or felt that the match was not structured in a way it should have been to really portray Asuka as a killer, you know, because that's the way that she'd been sort of pushed in the run-up to TLC, as this sort of unstoppable force whom everyone would be afraid of. I felt after Asuka had won the match, what they should have done was they should have gone to the women's locker room, Adam all sat round watching the match, and then all of them, you know, just, we could have had like a shot of all the women reacting to her win and looking concerned.
Yeah, that'd have been great. That'd have been great.
I think that would have been a nice little touch that would have been so easy to do. You know, you could, you know, you can add, you know, a hilarious comment at this point, turn it into a joke, which absolutely shouldn't be. It should just be, you know, everybody not even just speechless and just like reacting of, oh no, we are really, you know, the emotion they're expressing is, oh no, I don't really want to be in the ring with her. She looks unbeatable. I felt that would have been a really nice touch. But overall, I enjoyed the match. Probably it did go too long. But in a sense, I kind of felt like Emma got something out of it as well. So it was a match where Asuka was put over and ultimately did look very strong. And Emma looked stronger than she has done. So I think there was two winners there. That's my opinion. What do you think, Kenny?
I'm totally with you. I just think the match should have probably been about 5 minutes. I don't think she needed 9 minutes to beat Emma. And that's more indicative of how Emma's been presented as opposed to Emma's ability. I felt like for whatever reason on Raw, it wasn't as hot as it was the night before.
Absolutely agreed. Why did the match take place again? I just thought it was a decisive outcome. There was no reason for these two to be pitted against each other again. And I just felt, I have, to be honest with you, Kenny, I have almost no memories of the Raw match. I can still remember the TLC match, but the Raw match has already faded from memory, which tells you how much of an impression it made.
I did love the finish in the Raw match, you know, where I think it's Emma goes to like the roll up or something and Asuka reverses it into the Asuka lock. So I thought the finish in the Raw match was actually better than the pay-per-view. But yeah, I think that is, you know, when you've watched the match on pay-per-view and you're kind of like, oh, I think it's maybe 3 or 4 minutes too long, and then they give you it the next night again, it's kind of like, you know, you're not really that, you're not salivating to see it again.
Yeah, so, exactly.
I will say, I thought that, you know, obviously we're going to get to the big Survivor Series angle. I was very pleased that they kept Asuka out of that.
Yes.
You know, the last thing she needed was to be beaten down with everybody else. So that was a good choice. Let's talk about Finn Balor and AJ Styles. Their match, you know, fans are chatting, this is awesome before it even begins. They have this kind of, you know, stormer of an 18-minute match. Some really, really interesting spots with, you know, AJ goes for the phenomenal forearm and Balor just kind of shoves him onto the floor, which I don't think we've seen before in WWE yet. I think that was a first.
Yeah, I can't recall seeing that either.
There's that, you know, Balor does like this drop kick and AJ flies into the turnbuckle and it makes this sickening noise as if, you know, AJ's back just been broken. And in the end, Finn Balor kind of kills him with a coup de grace that just, you know, he looks like he stomped on him and just wouldn't let go. Finn gets the win as the demon, and then they do the two sweet hand gesture to the roar of the crowd. What do you think is AJ as a replacement, the idea of bringing him over, and how did the match live up?
Yeah, I felt that this was the start of something, and that we're going to see these two in action again next year, with probably a match that will be even better than this was. I mean, I really enjoyed it. It was the match of the night for me. It just felt like these said to these guys, right, just go out there and show us what you've got. And that's always a really nice thing to see in WWE, because a lot of times you sort of feel like these wrestlers are really sort of hamstrung by the creative machinery, and also by the expectations or rather limitations that are put on them by the agents or producers or whatever you call them now. And it just felt like to me that they just said, right, go out there and just show us what you've got. Show us what you can do. And they just showed us how good these two guys are. We know these two guys are amazing, Kenny, don't we? We know, we've known this for years. This is not a secret.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that I said this before in another podcast, but I think it's worth bringing up, is that what made me happy about this was Vince McMahon clearly sees AJ Styles as a player. Because he's positioning him and, you know, he was the guy that worked with Shane at WrestleMania. He is the guy that when they needed somebody to come to Raw and come to the pay-per-view and tear the house down, they brought AJ Styles. So I think that says to you kind of how Vince feels about him, which I'm happy about, because, you know, AJ's one of those guys that I don't know if he's 40 yet or if he's about to become 40, but AJ's a guy who at this point in his career, he can't really handle 2 years in the mid-card just kind of faffing about. You know, he needs to be a player, a top name, and I'm glad he is. So he turned 40 in June, so he is 40 years old. But yeah, I just every time I watch AJ Styles, I'm just more in awe of him. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Shawn Michaels.
Everything's just so precise with him, and you have to, when he does something, you have total confidence that it's going to be executed perfectly. That's what gets me about him, and he's just an absolute machine in there.
It's like when Michaels came back and did his second run, and I think he was about 37 when he came back in 2002.
Yeah, I think he was born in 65, wasn't he? July 65, I think he was born. So he came back August 2002. So yeah, he would have been. Yeah,
so he was 37. And, you know, but I mean, even like 2005, 2007, 2008, he was having killer matches in his 40s. And I feel like AJ is that guy that, you know, when did AJ join? January 2016.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, and Finn Balor's, he's 36 now, I think he is.
Yeah, he's 36.
Yeah, so I mean, he's been wrestling for a long time as well. He knows what he's doing.
I think AJ Styles, what I was going to say was, I think that, you know, I assume his contract will be up in January of 2019. It's usually 3-year deals that they do. And,
yes.
And at that point, he'll be 41 going on 42. I think if he goes the way he's going, I could see him re-signing for another 3 years and doing a Michaels. And I hope he does, because he's great.
Absolutely. I mean, where else is he going to go? And where else? I mean, okay, he could go back to New Japan, but he's going to make a hell of a lot more money in WWE as a top player. They believe in him now. By then, he'll have the confidence that he'll know that he's going to be pushed, and he should get a significant pay rise. He certainly deserves it. I mean, he's, I mean, if you're going to talk about WWE performers and the best, I mean, he's got to be either number one or two in the ring. He just has to be. And looking at these two guys wrestling each other, they both look like, it looked like choose your first and choose your second, you know? These two are, in this match were the top two in-ring performers in this company, and they proved that in this match. So, yeah, I loved the match. Thought it was terrific. I think they could do better, but that's, I'm not knocking the match. I'm not nitpicking.
They very clearly gave you a taste of what they could do, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It kind of felt almost like a New Japan match. And I'm not saying that to knock WWE. What I'm saying that because it just felt like they did or perhaps a WrestleMania match where they're allowed to do so much more than they would normally do. It really felt like that, where they said, right, this is a big match. You need to over deliver here. You need to go above and beyond and do all the extra stuff or much of the extra stuff that you can do. So this match really stands out, lingers in fans' memories as a match of tremendous importance and one that people will be talking about for a long time to go, long time to come. And I think it will be.
And then we get to the main event. It's Kurt Angle in full Shield gear. I popped so big for that when he comes out. Just he looked like my favorite thing was somebody said that Kurt Angle was cosplaying as the Shield, which right. was and he, you know, he looked so happy. And he comes out and they have this big kind of 35-minute thing. So many twists and turns with Braun and Kane and all these different things. So what did you think of it? I'm curious. What was your thought on the match? On obviously Kurt Angle's not the same performer he was 5 years ago, but how did it live up to the hype that people had going into it?
I'm not really sure what to think of the match, Kenny. Firstly, it was a TLC match. Why were they having a TLC match? In a TLC match, there is usually something above the ring, and there was nothing above the ring.
No, yeah, it was just basically a hardcore match. I do think, though, like, it was one of those things, the best way I've heard it described is like, it was kind of like watching a Transformers movie.
It was.
I mean that as a compliment. Like, I enjoyed the shit out of that match. And I don't want it all the time, at all. But, like, I just found myself, I was like, this is quite fun. Because yeah. It's a one-off thing. It wouldn't be fun if they did this on a regular basis. But I think, you know, having the novelty of Kurt Angle being there and being involved and the stuff with Braun and Kane, but there was enough different things going on that it kept my attention at least.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of things going on in it. I mean, it was seeing Angle in there. There was like the moment where he was doing the German suplexes in the ring, and that kind of felt like the moment where you were finally seeing Kurt Angle.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
And he had this look, and you're like, right, he's got the floor. The floor is his. And he's doing these things, and that's what people wanted to see him do. And when he's in there with there was eight guys in total in the match, wasn't there, at the beginning?
Yeah.
It just felt like he was a little bit lost. I was slightly worried for him.
Feel at the beginning, it almost felt like for the first kind of 5 minutes, you were like, is he not going to take any bumps? Like, is this just going to be like a Bret Hart 2010 thing?
But yeah.
Then he came out of his shell.
Yeah, he did. I mean, I was slightly concerned about him coming back in this match, but obviously they were like they planned it all in advance, as everything in WWE is planned, to protect him so that there would be no potential very slim likelihood that he would suffer any injuries. So he wasn't really, you know, he wasn't doing any stupid things which he's done before, like the moonsault off the cage, which he was famous for doing in TNA as it was known then. I mean, he took a power slam through a table, didn't he, from Strowman, I think it was, wasn't it?
He did, yeah, and that laid him out for like 10 minutes, and then that gave them, you know, gave people the big pop when at the end his music hits and he comes back out.
Yeah, it was exactly the same storyline they did with Brock Lesnar, didn't they, in a match earlier in the year, was it the four-way match?
Yeah, he got carted out and then he comes back, yeah. So it kind of very similar.
It's the Terry Funk storyline. Terry Funk was famous for this, where he suffers an injury, is taken to the back, then comes back and does like crying and, you know, the heroic babyface come back. Terry Funk was the master of this, absolute master of this. No one's will ever do it, in my opinion, better than he did it. The match felt a bit cartoonish at times, I've got to say, Kenny, where the thing that got me, right, there's a lot of things about this, and we could probably talk about this for 15 minutes. Like, there was the Kane and Braun Strowman fallout. that's just like, well, where's that come from? And then Kane chucks Braun Strowman in the back of a rubbish truck. And then the time, you know. And,
I love when you're explaining it sounds so, it's almost like, you know, when you're reading an audiobook or you're listening to an audio version of a book, and when you hear it out loud, it's just so much funnier.
Yeah. And then to which Michael Cole said, and I wrote this down, Kenny, guys, I have no idea what to say after what we just saw. This is completely beyond sports entertainment. This was after Strowman was thrown in the rubbish truck, presumably to his death.
Do you know the tag team Heavy Machinery in NXT?
Yes.
Someone is, what's the guy's name? Otto, the smaller guy in the tag team. And somebody had said that maybe they should do a storyline where Braun Strowman's been compacted and he comes back as the Heavy Machinery guy.
That's pretty good.
And then in a couple of weeks, it'll even back out and he'll be Braun again. Just bringing that little guy out in the Braun gear would be like one of the funniest. It would make no sense, but I would laugh uncontrollably.
Yeah, that would be amusing. And like the commentary is just looming.
Booker T, David Otunga, all is forgiven. Come back.
Exactly. I mean, after Angle is carried out of the match, Booker called Angle pathetic, a bravado fueled egomaniac. And then at the end of the match,
then when he won. What did he say?
Then at the end of the match, after Angle comes back out and of course the babyfaces win, Booker says, "I knew they could do it."
Obviously we're not going to touch on all the matches just because of time, but I mean, I know, when I heard this, I thought this is going to be Finn's line of the night. Do you know where I'm going with this? On the pre-show, during Sasha Banks and Alicia Fox, the match is midway through, and with no context or, like, setup, Booker T just goes, "Alicia Fox reminds me of the missing link."
Oh yeah, I wrote this quote down as well. She goes from being crazy to technical, all in a drop of a hat. I don't get it. I remember a guy by the name of the Missing Link. He was kind of like that.
I mean,
never thought that the Missing Link would be mentioned, and definitely not that she would be compared with Alicia Fox.
I mean, you know, like, that's funny, right? Like, the Alicia Fox thing is funny. Like, so I probably should be admitting this on various podcasts, but I, you know, participated in a little bit of 420 on Sunday night, and I was kind of recovering my mental capabilities as the pay-per-view began. So Booker T's commentary to me was just the funniest thing on the planet, right? I mean, imagine in that mindset listening to Booker T, and he was all... It was just his voice I could hear, because every time he would speak, it'd be so stupid. But what I really honestly think, all joking aside about Booker, is that it's fine in a prelim match that nobody cares about to make a funny Missing Link joke. That's fine. Nobody cares. But when you've got a pay-per-view main event with a return of Kurt Angle and the Shield and all that sort of stuff, to me, there's a level of quality that you need to bring on the commentary desk. And people can shit on guys like Byron Saxton and that. I think Byron Saxton's fine. He's not great. I mean, it's not like you're going to, you know, take pitchforks to the company if he's not on commentary, but he's solid enough. And
yes.
I think Booker T is appalling at calling big-time matches right now and does not deserve to be on that team. He needs to be gone. I would prefer they brought back Jerry Lawler to this.
Well, I mean, Jerry Lawler probably would be an improvement, I've got to say, because Booker at times is just all over the place. I mean, but Jerry Lawler, do not bring him back, please. I mean, that guy...
Find me somebody, though. Find me somebody.
Well, I would rather they got someone in his 20s or 30s, someone young and hungry who's got something to prove and someone who's going to come in prepared, you know?
Do I hear the noises of David Otunga? Do I hear the noises of David Otunga there in his 30s coming back to save us all?
Well, I've got to say, I watched the pre-show, I watched the kickoff, and David Otunga, as you know, was on the panel. I just thought he was extremely dull. So, I mean, David Otunga may be an improvement. I was kind of joking when I said David Otunga, come back, all is forgiven.
I'm not. Come back.
But I mean, he's not really the answer either.
Percy Watson?
I mean, he's going to make more sense than Booker, but I just think he's really quite... He just doesn't. He's got no sort of spark to him. There's no vitality there. He doesn't feel like, to me, when I'm listening to David Otunga talk, he doesn't strike me as somebody that is a real fan of the product and really wants to get excited about it. To me, he strikes me as a guy who's just there to earn a paycheck, you know, and to increase his Twitter followers and, you know, be a somebody. He doesn't strike me as somebody that is going to really get into the show and really push the show and push the guys and try and get people over and get matches over and get the product over and attract more people to the company. To me, an announcer should be doing that. Probably my favorite announce team of the last 16, 17 years would have been Jim Ross and Paul Heyman, 2001. And they were dynamite. They were just, I mean, they were there ripping each other, but not always to the detriment of the product. And they were just so on, you know, they were just so dynamic. And when you listen to them, you were just really interested in what their next observation would be about what had just occurred. And it just, to me, those guys just felt like they wanted to be there. And they were just, the only, when they were commentating, I could believe that the only thing that mattered to those two guys was what was occurring in the ring in front of them. And that's what we should think about an announcer. The announcer should be drawing us into the match and making us care as much as they do.
Yeah, I would concur with that. And before we talk about Raw and SmackDown, let's talk about some other stuff. We obviously covered in this podcast a couple of times about the potential Four Horsewomen versus Four Horsewomen match. Mm. So it was in the Observer this week that is the plan for WrestleMania. That's what it's going to be. Survivor Series obviously is Raw versus SmackDown, so it doesn't really fit in there. And there's a feeling that given all the women some extra time, will be good for them. Ronda Rousey was at the Performance Center this week training. I think it's a good idea to keep it to WrestleMania. This is a WrestleMania match, I think, and I think it would be a high up the card match. Ronda Rousey, I think it might get some steam into the Four Horsewomen of WWE again, and with them all getting some more time to train, it means we're going to get a better quality of match. So I'm for it.
Yeah, I'm absolutely for it as well, and it'll mean that the match will be given a generous amount of time on the show, which in years gone by, some of the women's matches have really just been given a disrespectful amount of time. So I think with Ronda in there, they're going to get the big push, they'll get the big entrances, the full package, and it should be a memorable match. Hopefully, you know, you would hope that they're going to do this match and that whatever happens in it and whatever the result is, then leads somebody, the people who are staying somewhere. That's what I want to see. And too often with WrestleMania matches, and you know this, Kenny, and everyone listening to this knows this, is that they'll have a WrestleMania match involving a celebrity or an outsider, and it's just sort of, that's it, it's the end. It doesn't take the person who's been part of it anywhere. You know, and it just all goes back to the Steve Austin, Mike Tyson thing. And Steve Austin, people say, oh, Austin was, you know, Mike Tyson made Steve Austin. And Mike Tyson contributed to Steve Austin. But Steve Austin was there anyway, and Tyson just gave him that, you know, that little leg up to become even bigger than he was. So I'm hoping they've got a plan for whoever either beats Rousey, if someone does beat her, or whoever teams with her. That's what I would like to see, Kenny. Part of a longer plan that's going to benefit WWE after WrestleMania.
Yeah, 100%. I also think it's really, really positive that, and listen, I actually do like the Stephanie McMahon character in theory. You know, if she was able to let babyfaces get one up on her, it'd be even better. But like,
yeah, agreed.
I'm very happy that Ronda Rousey is actually going to be involved with the women in WWE, because those are the women that are going on the road. Those are the women that are going on all these tours, and I think that you can sell tickets based on these women who've been in there with Ronda Rousey and all that. And you know, to me, if I'm looking at it, I'm going, okay, how do we book this match so that we can do Charlotte and Ronda as one of the SummerSlam main events in Brooklyn?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. That's what I'd like to see. I mean, I don't know whether they'll be able to get her back again. I mean, that would be the thing, wouldn't it? That if Charlotte gets the pinfall on her or something like that, it's hard for me to believe that Ronda's going to lose, but I mean, it's possible. It's part of a two-match program. That would be terrific.
Yeah, I'm very, very hopeful. So I wanted to talk a little bit very quickly about Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor, we mentioned before that, you know, so much going on there. Kenny Omega has been announced for the Supercard of Honor show in New Orleans, WrestleMania weekend. And for the first time in the memory that I mean, I think it's the first time ever that New Japan actually don't have a show on in Japan WrestleMania weekend. So that the New Japan guys are actually going to be, some of them are going to be a part of the Ring of Honor show that goes head to head with TakeOver the night before WrestleMania, which is very interesting.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
You know, if there's a show with, you know, the Bucks, Cody, Marty Scurll, Okada, and Omega, I mean, it's a big show.
So, absolutely, Kenny. Yeah, absolutely huge and terrific for everyone who's going to New Orleans for all the events. Are you going this year, Kenny?
I am. I'm making my annual pilgrimage, and then hopefully one of these years we'll get you out there to see a wrestle. There's so many things in a WrestleMania weekend that I just love to watch your facial expression. Like, I just love to see your face at some of the things. Cause I just imagine you going, "Good God, Kenny! I mean, just look at this. Look at the state of what's going on." And I'd be like, yeah, I know. Agreeing with you. But I also, speaking of Ring of Honor, I saw a promo that Cody put on his Facebook, or Twitter, sorry, and I just thought it was so good. So ROH are running San Antonio on November 17th, which is the Friday of Survivor Series weekend. And WWE are also running San Antonio on that night.
And that's the one Shawn Michaels is making, he's special referee, isn't he, for a match?
Yeah, so Sean's refereeing the NXT title match with Drew McIntyre and Adam Cole. But what's interesting is, so Cody, they did this video, and Cody was like, you know, they've given you cease and desist, they've taken all my dad's ideas, blah, 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 blah. And then Marty Scurll's like, oh, they took my umbrella gimmick. And then Cody says, do you know what? I want the McMahons to come to Ring of Honor on November 17th. I want them to come for free, blah, blah, blah. And then the Bucks kind of stop and go, no. We don't pay for our house. They can't get in for free. And Marty Scurll's like, I've got a good idea. What about a 10% discount? So they're doing a legitimate thing. So if you're in San Antonio listening to this, or in the area, if you have on your ID, you have the surname McMahon, you get 10% off your ticket, which I just think is just... They come up with all these little viral things to do that I just think are so clever to combat, you know. Because, I mean, you must have experienced loads in your time of covering wrestling of where WWE have ran a town the same night as someone else to try and, you know, draw a crowd out.
They were famous for it back in the 80s, weren't they? I mean, that was just stuff they did all the time and you know, all they would run a show the night before. They were famous for it during the WCW, WWF war back in like 89. They were sort of famous for like running a house show the night before in the building that WCW was running a pay-per-view the next day, and the show would go long, so they would have less time to set up and the crowd would be tired, figuring that many of the same people who were going to be at the WWF show on Saturday would be at the WCW show on the Sunday. So they would do all these tricks. Yeah, of course they did all these things. And I think it's great that Ring of Honor's doing this and these guys do it. They're the perfect guys to do it. The rebels, the cool guys. And their fans are the people that find WWE irritating. So, of course, they're getting over massively with them. And this is, you know, this is kind of a thing that ECW used to do, where it was us versus them, you know. ECW was a reaction to the establishment. That was ECW. So it was us versus them, and it's all about rallying the fans and getting that fan loyalty, which is something that TNA, throughout its entire existence, never really had, I don't think, Kenny. I don't think TNA really ever had. Maybe it did in 2005, 2006, when it was creatively at its hottest. But you didn't really have that fan loyalty that Vince was always excellent getting from his audience. You know, don't support WCW. I mean, I remember when I was running Power Slam, and WCW was really hot, 96, 97. Frequently, I would get letters from people saying, well, I'm a WWF fan, and I just don't feel like I can watch WCW because I would feel like I was betraying the WWF. And Vince had that sort of level of loyalty. I mean, you could call it brainwashing, which, let's face it, is exactly what it was. And I always used to think, well, why are you depriving yourself? You know, the pleasure of watching this really good wrestling. Why not watch all this other stuff? And it's because it had been drummed into them. You have to be loyal to this brand and no other. So, I mean, Ring of Honor doing this with those guys, I think it's excellent. It's absolutely brilliant for, you know, building that fan loyalty and that diehard fans, and obviously great for those guys with people buying their merchandise and things like that, and driving up their value in other promotions as well. So, yeah, well done. Absolutely first-class work by Ring of Honor.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, doing that kind of stuff, you know, 10% discount to McMahon's, it's cool. You know, it's cool.
Of course
it is. And you, when you, and oh, it's funny because Cody had received a tweet from someone who said, the guy was replying to something that Jimmy Jacobs had written, and the guy wrote, typical guy leaves WWE, shits on WWE to get some heat, and people rally around them. It's what Cody Rhodes did, it's bitterness. And Cody retweeted it and said, it's not bitterness to compete or dare to dream. Me and my crew can't be touched right now, and I don't mind telling the world. And then he does a quote, and the quote is, step on toes, from VKM. So, well, and I genuinely do think that Vince McMahon probably, you know, he probably thinks good on Cody for doing some stuff and creating some waves and making some moves, because that's what you need to do. If you leave WWE and you want to be a successful wrestler, like, why would you not want to be creating the biggest wave you can away from there?
Definitely, and you've got all these people in there who are frustrated because they don't feel like they were used to the fullness of their potential. It's like, well, get out there on the indie circuit and don't just phone it in and do the, you know, pitcher gimmick and just like make the money, and then, you know, hopefully like 6 months, a year, 18 months down the line, you might get the call to come back and do the same thing. And it's like, well, if you've got that attitude that you're not really interested in developing your character or becoming bigger outside WWE than you were when you were in it, then, you know, to me, you're not much of an entrepreneur. And as we know, wrestlers are independent contractors and they're businesses themselves. So I think it's very, I'm so proud of what Cody Rhodes has done for himself. I mean, he took a lot of people like, well, why is he doing this? And he'd had enough being Stardust. He'd had enough being there on a road to nowhere in WWE and wanted to take charge. And you can already see Neville being involved in this lot, can't you? You can see a space for him, either as a member of the Bullet Club or somebody opposing them, or maybe somebody who's opposing them who then gets recruited.
Yeah.
You can see that coming, can't you, Kenny?
Yeah, 100%. I was having a chat the other day with a wrestler who will not be named, and he is not in WWE right now. And I was saying, in my head, I was going, this is probably the best time to not be in WWE. Because there's all these options, there's all these places you can go. If you go to WWE right now, unless you are like a sort of, unless you're AJ Styles or something, like, it's not, like, there's so many people in NXT, there's so many people in the main roster, that to get from the bottom to the top is arguably, I think, harder now than it's ever been for a wrestler. Like, how, like, if you think about all the hoops that you need to get through, you know, on NXT they have minimum of 10 people who could go onto the main roster tomorrow and be mid-carders, upper-carders, or some could be main event. And then on the main roster, you've got 15 guys who could all be main event. So there's so much competition to get a top spot now that if you can manage to go other places and make money, then I think go for it.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, Vince does respect this. He respects guys going out there and making it happen so that, you know, one day they can work together again. You know, I mean, look at Brock Lesnar. He was a guy who left WWE in 2004. Obviously, WWE did not respect that decision because that ended up in court, but he was a guy that ended up reinventing himself as an MMA fighter, became fabulously successful from a box office standpoint in UFC, and then after retiring for the first time in December 2011, basically wrote his own contract to go back in 2012. Vince absolutely respected that. Because if he did not respect that, he would not have paid Lesnar all that money and given him that part-time contract. So Vince absolutely respects things like that. I think more wrestlers should really take a leaf out of these guys' books and really try and improve themselves and make themselves more marketable. And you know, there's so many things that haven't been done, and there's so many things that have been done in the past that could be done again. And I think rather than just taking it easy and phoning it in and just the bare minimum, get out there and really try and make some noise. And in a way, it's easier than ever if you've got a following on Twitter. I mean, a lot of these guys coming out of when they leave WWE have got hundreds of thousands, even a million Twitter followers. Why aren't they making the best use of that? Why aren't they capitalizing on that to really make a name for themselves as a different character doing different things?
Well, I remember saying, as a joke, I said on Twitter, it's like I've got 20-something thousand followers on Twitter. I remember putting a joke out saying, if all of you give me a pound, I wouldn't need to work for a year. but then, you know, it is that thing of, like, people who have, like, 100,000 followers, 150,000 followers, it's like, Twitter's a very weird thing because there's an engagement that you have, but you need to be clever with Twitter because you don't want Twitter to turn into something where you're always trying to get people to spend money on you. You know, Twitter's almost in a way like somebody's kind of sitting down in a chair and going, entertain me with your tweets, or like engage me, or they want something from your Twitter, you know? And I, because you can see some Twitter accounts where it's a constant shill.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't get you anywhere. It's just, anyway. I also wanted to bring up very quickly the Jeff Jarrett situation. It's not funny this week. It's just kind of sad. He was at an independent show in Canada on Friday night. RCW, I think their name was.
Real Canadian wrestling.
Yeah. And he did the show in Edmonton, I think it was. And then he was supposed to... it was either he did the show in Calgary and he was supposed to go to Edmonton, or he did the show in Edmonton and was supposed to go to Calgary. He turned up apparently not in very good shape in terms of his faculties being about him. And he said that he'd had a problem at customs and that he needed to go home straight after the show. The promotion said they contacted customs, who said they knew nothing about this. He was apparently passed out in the back. There's footage online of his match, and he does look like he has some issues. So
yeah, definitely slurring his words in the pre-match promo.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, fair play to the guy. He's still wearing his Global Force tights. So, I mean, the man will die promoting that brand. But so then Impact Wrestling announced that they are officially cutting ties with him fully. He has gone. They have no more link to Global Force Wrestling. And now it's come out that he has entered rehab, WWE-sponsored. Karen Jarrett apparently got that set up for him. Sad state of affairs for Jeff, and sincerely, all joking aside and stuff, I hope that he gets the help that he needs, and I hope that he's able to turn it around.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you there, Kenny. You know, we saw Jeff Hardy back in 2011, wasn't it, when we had the incident there, entered outpatient rehab that summer. I think it was actually late spring, early summer. Came back to Impact in August of that year. Everyone's like, what's TNA doing? Are they mad, giving him another chance? And, you know, he proved that he'd changed his life. So it can be done. We definitely hope that Jeff Jarrett will do the same thing.
Now, you know, we were talking about the Impact pizza and the Impact drink that they had.
Yeah.
What I would love to hear is, if anyone who's listening to this, please find us someone who has tasted the Impact pizza and drink. We want feedback on this. I am daily checking the Crust and Crates Facebook page just in case a review goes up of the pizza, but none as of yet. But before we kind of finish off top of Raw and SmackDown, take us through a little bit, Finn. The financials of WWE have come out for the third quarter. How are they looking compared to the last quarter and compared to this time last year, I guess?
They're looking pretty good, yeah. I mean, for the quarter ending September 30th, WWE grossed $186.4 million, from which it made a net profit of $21.8 million. That's actually really good compared to their performance earlier in the year. In the first quarter of the year, they grossed $188.4 million and recorded a net profit of just $0.9 million. It was in the first quarter ending March 31st. In the second quarter, they grossed $214.6 million, from which they made a net profit of $5.1 million. So it's been a good quarter for them in terms of financials, especially in terms of actual net profits. The mind boggles, isn't it, Kenny, that you can gross $214.6 million and only make a net profit of $5.1 million. And worse, you could, from a gross of $188.4 million, only make a net profit of less than a million. That's almost some type of reverse achievement, isn't it?
It's almost like watching The Apprentice, when someone has to do their whole, you know, make a profit from this, and then, you know, they have all this money and they come out with like a tiny profit at the end of it. What about the network subs? I think I read it was like 1.52 million is the number now. What was it the last quarter? Was it?
Yeah, it has dropped. Yeah, this was something that this was not something that WWE put at the front of its quarterly earnings report. Of course, you have to do a little bit of not digging. You just have to read things to actually spot the fact that the numbers have fallen. As of June 30th this year, WWE Network had 1.568 million paying subscribers. As of September 30th this year, it had 1.507 million paying subscribers. So the number has fallen from 1.568 million to 1.507 million. So it has dropped slightly.
I'm not expecting you to have all the numbers from the history of the network here, but from off the top of your head, this time last, because obviously this year they made a very conscious effort with No Mercy after SummerSlam to load that pay-per-view up with the double main event, Cena Reigns, Braun and Brock. Is it less of a kind of loss of the paid subscribers this year in the third quarter as it was last year? Like, are they doing a little bit better in that regard, or is it
that's the thing that they've actually stressed in the quarterly earnings report, is that they've got more subscribers in the third quarter this year than they had in the third quarter last year. But it's not many more. There's not okay. much in it really, Kenny, but the number has at least gone up slightly. But I think the thing that we really need to stress is the fact that they've made a terrific net profit there, 21.8 million in the quarter. That's really good.
So let me ask you, just do you think, say we get another year into this and WWE go, okay, we need to make some more money, and they're figuring stuff out. If WWE were to come out, say after WrestleMania 34, and they were to just say, you know, however they would promote it, but they would basically say that from now on, the only pay-per-view that is no longer going to be on the network is WrestleMania. WrestleMania is going to go back to traditional pay-per-view, and that's it. Do you think that that would be something that they could get away with? Do you think that fans, for the most part, would still watch the network in the same kind of way? Like, cause I guess if, you know, leading up to WrestleMania, you would sign up for Rumble and Elimination Chamber and all that kind of stuff. Do you think that it's something that they could do, or do you think they've kind of just missed the boat and they now kind of have to stick with their decision?
I'm not sure if they can do that, because WrestleMania, if you buy it as a pay-per-view, what is it? Is it like $59.95 or something like that?
Yeah.
It's like $60 or maybe even $70.
I think it was like $55 in standard and then like $65 or $70 in HD. Something like that. That was the last time they did it. The last time they did a WrestleMania on pay-per-view was 2014, right? Because it got big numbers in pay-per-view because the network had just launched for like a month.
Yeah, I mean, they still offer it, don't they? They still offer the events on pay-per-view, from what I understand, but obviously
yeah, so
not
I
that.
I guess you're looking at maybe the 1 million people who watch it on the network.
Yes.
I mean,
the thing about WrestleMania, if you go back and look at the numbers, they have nearly 2 million subscribers around the time of WrestleMania. We talked about this last week. And what happens is literally hundreds of thousands of people sign up for the network just before WrestleMania to watch it for free and then unsubscribe when they're about to be charged. And this happens every year. So all those people who are just dropping in for WrestleMania, who are like reliving their childhoods or whatever, having the nostalgia kick, which lots of people do for WrestleMania each year, they're not having to pay for it anymore. So they're missing out on all that money.
Well, something they should also look at doing, and I don't know how you manage this, I'm not really technical enough, but so I've got like two email addresses that I use for different things, right? One's like more of a business one, one's more of a personal one, and my network subscription is through the business email. And I used to have the network on my personal email address, and I still get notifications every now and then offering me like 3 months for free to come back. And like I remember getting it when it was basically they were saying you get Battleground, NXT TakeOver, SummerSlam, and No Mercy if I come back. And in my head I'm going, that's a lot of stuff to offer me for free.
Yeah.
Like, to me, you shouldn't ever be having SummerSlam, Royal Rumble, WrestleMania for free. And also, maybe they need to introduce something. There's a thing that you can get. There's certainly websites that you can sign up for free trials of stuff, right? Like, whether it's like IMDb Pro or whatever it is, you know, Now TV, and there's a lot of them that have a thing where they actually test your IP address of where you're coming from. It's not through your email, it's your IP. And if your IP has signed up for a free trial, you can never use a free trial on that IP ever again. Which I think would be a better way to police it, really. Because you can always sign up for a new email address, but it's not that you can always go and buy a new laptop to get something. So, and you know, you can't really sign up for it in any other way. So it feels like maybe that's a route they could go down to sort of stop this whole people constantly getting shows for free.
I mean, you can see it's happening, can't you? Because the numbers go up at WrestleMania each year and then just drop right back. So, I mean, we've, you know, here we are like over three and a half years into the WWE Network era. So we can see these patterns occurring every year.
To me, you should never be offering, whether it's a person you're trying to bring back or whether it's something you want to bring in new, to me, WrestleMania should never be free in any way, shape, or form. I actually think they should do something where, like, for the month that WrestleMania is in, you need to pay an extra $10 to get WrestleMania. They should do something, because WrestleMania is worth... Like, WrestleMania 33, I thought was a great show in terms of, like, the amount of stuff that you got. I mean, it was a marathon to get through, but, you know, when you think about all the stuff that you got, and you're like... I mean, if anybody really thinks that's just worth $10, you need medical help. I mean, that was six hours.
It's worth a hell of a lot more. And when you think of everything else that you're getting as well, the question was, will people go back to paying that amount of money for one event? And I don't know whether they will, Kenny. I think they would do after a while because they get used to the idea of it. I mean, remember when Sky Box Office started charging over here? Royal Rumble 2002 was the first event that we had to pay for in Sky Box Office. And there was the amount of complaints I received at the time. I'm not paying for it. I pay my Sky subscription. Why should I have to pay more? And by the time the next event was offered on Sky Box Office, no one complained. It was just normal. So I think there'd be a lot of complaints at first if they were to do it. But by year two, people would just accept it.
Also, we as UK fans, we used to get a great deal. We never had to pay for pay-per-views.
And
that's when they brought in the Sky Box Office UK shows and stuff. But like, we would get, I mean, I don't know, say like 98 or something. If the pay-per-views were $30 a month, you know, you saved like hundreds of pounds by just having it on Sky Sports.
Absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, and people in America, as someone has pointed out to me some time back. We say that Raw and SmackDown are on free TV. They're actually on cable TV, which you have to pay for. I mean, the thing over here was like, oh, well, I pay for my Sky Sports subscription, or Sky subscription. It's a premium service, so I shouldn't have to pay more for a WWF pay-per-view as it was then. Well, what they were actually saying was, we haven't paid for it previously, and we object to the fact that we're now having to pay for it. So you always have that hurdle to get over. But once you've got over it and people have got used to the idea of paying for it, they just either pay for it or they don't. And obviously the Sky Box Office thing was very successful for WWF, WWE over here for many years. You know,
plus, we had to go through that Channel 4 fiasco where the Royal Rumble 2000, the first show that they put on, they just put ad breaks in the middle of matches.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. Can I just say one more thing about the WWE Network, Kenny?
Sure.
Yeah, I think the solution to this... So, I mean, you could go back to charging for WrestleMania, but I think there'd be such an outcry. I think a lot of people would unsubscribe, and I think it would be very unpopular because people have got used to paying such a small amount of money for so much now. So I think it would... You know, people, let's face it, Kenny, people do not celebrate the fact that something is going to cost them more, do they? You know,
I
think WWE should just put the price of the network up. I think that's problem solved. I think they, after WrestleMania next year, or even before WrestleMania next year, they should put the price up. I think if they were charging £12.95 in pounds, £12.95 in dollars, it'd still be a bargain. Maybe you could even bump it up to £14.95. To me, it's still a bargain.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking a little bit about this through a personal experience. You know, we have our Patreon page that we have, and I'm always very aware of people getting content for what they pay for. And I think some people, like, I know a lot of people I've seen before have said, why can't Raw and SmackDown be in the network? And it's like, I understand, like, as a fan, you might just be, oh, I wish that Raw was in the network. But, like, if you look at wrestling the way that you and I look
at it... I'll tell you why, Kenny, because TV rights in the last quarter grossed $64.7 million. To this day, it's still the biggest revenue stream for WWE. It needs that TV money, and it also needs that TV to make new fans.
Yeah, and I think most of our listeners as well realize that exact same thing. You know, the people listening to this podcast are intelligent wrestling fans who kind of get most of what's going on, right? So it's not like people are listening to this going, I think Raw and SmackDown should just be in the network, because, you know, you get why it's not, right? And I think that actually in the next kind of 5 years or so, I think there's more chance of Raw and SmackDown being on Netflix than there is of it being in the network. Because,
yes,
you know, I think that WWE stuff will eventually go to some sort of streaming service like Netflix rather than being on TV, because I think TV will die out eventually. But WWE, they need to be paid for Raw and SmackDown. That needs to be how it works. So, you know, there's just no possible way to monetize having those shows on the network. But, you know, you do get Raw and SmackDown 4 weeks after they've aired on the network. So as soon as it's, you know, if you go on the network right now and go to the Raw replay, you can get every show up until the night after No Mercy. So it's not a terrible deal either, you know, that you've got all that stuff available to you. So yeah, basically the method of the story is they're doing pretty well and the network is worth more than $9.99.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely think it is. And that's not going to be a popular statement, I'm sure. Why is he suggesting that we should pay more? Companies already making tons of money, and it is. So I absolutely, if someone's right now saying, Finlay, you're an idiot, why are you suggesting that they charge us more? I understand that as well. But I'm just, you know, trying to look at it from both sides here, is that if WWE does want to bring in more money, and okay, they had a terrific last quarter, but you look at the quarters earlier in the year, as I've said, were not as good in terms of profit. I know there was additional expenses and stuff that brought the profit down, but if they want to bring in more money, to me, that's the way to do it. I mean, you know, if they put it up to $12.95, that's, you would think of everything you get, Kenny, it's still a bargain. It just is.
Yeah, 100%. I think that there's excuse me, we are in a culture, and I'm guilty of it as well, I think we all are, we're in a culture of we get so much stuff for free now.
We do.
In various places. And I think there is this culture of, like, you, if people need to pay for something, you kind of have to stick to your guns and say, I think this is worth paying for. And if people don't agree, then they don't agree. But the danger you have in WWE are seeing this is that once you give stuff away for free, or once you give stuff away at a very, very low cut price, it's very hard to build that price back up.
It absolutely is, yeah. And people do take things for granted. I mean, it's just human nature, isn't it? You know?
It is. But let's talk about Raw and SmackDown as we kind of close off here. Raw, obviously, was a show that had, you know, Finn Balor getting murdered by Kane in a match. We had Shane McMahon and all of SmackDown invading the show. What did you think of Raw? What would you like to discuss that happened on the show?
I mean, I felt like it was, I felt it was a disappointing show, Kenny. I really, at the end, my heart sank at the end, really, by the time the show was over. To me, there was, like, Kurt Angle came out and announced all the Survivor Series matches straight away. So, well, why not create some storylines? You mean, you've got 4 weeks between events. This was the perfect time for WWE to actually create some storylines to make matches happen, not just say, oh yeah, this is what's happening, and that's that. The most disappointing one was the announcement of the Jinder Mahal versus Brock Lesnar match before Paul Heyman had come out and accepted it. So it's like, hang on a minute, we're waiting for Paul Heyman's promo. And that was kind of blown, because we already knew the match was happening. I mean, Heyman did a really good promo. I enjoyed that, where he referred to Jinder Mahal as a consolation prize. He wasn't in Lesnar's league, but then he kind of did a U-turn and said, well, nevertheless, we accept your challenge. Well, of course he had to accept the challenge, because Kurt Angle had already announced the match. So I thought that was nonsensical, Kenny. Absolutely nonsensical. I thought Kurt Angle's promo at the beginning, when he was announcing the matches, it was as if he shared, you know, my, what's the word? if as if he shared my
indifference.
Indifference, I guess, to this, to WWE's lack of imagination.
Do you think that Kurt Angle was thrilled about having to announce a match with Jinder Mahal?
Yeah. Well, probably in one of these podcasts, I'll probably mispronounce it as well, Kenny, so I'm not going to laugh at that.
You're not the GM of Raw, though.
Well, he should be able to get that right, yeah.
He should
be able to get that right.
I do want to quickly ask you about the... Just while we're on... I thought Paul Heyman did a really good promo on the show.
He did. It was terrific, yeah. It was as if he was there trying to counterbalance, you know, what had occurred previously. It was as if Heyman was saying, oh, no, they've just blown this, so I've got to really ramp it up here. I've got to really make this promo matter. So he kind of, you know, offered some compensation for that, you know, rather just sort of deflating announcements at the start of the show. And Angle just had no enthusiasm at all as he announced those matches.
I do want to ask you this. So basically it's come out that there is, there's going to be a guest referee for the Brock Lesnar Jinder Mahal match, and apparently WWE have three people that are interested in for that role. So I just want to name the names and just let me know what you think about them being a referee in this match, and would it enhance or hurt it. So the first name that they are hopeful may want to do it is The Rock.
Okay, I don't really want to see The Rock in WWE again. I just think he needs to just, if he's going to do stuff, it's maybe just a little promo, but keep it short. I just feel like when The Rock comes back, it's all about him, and it shouldn't be about him. It should be about the guys that are there now. So, no, I don't want to see The Rock in that match. He'll overshadow both guys. So, absolutely, thumbs down to The Rock.
I think your thumb might change in a minute. The second option is Stone Cold Steve Austin. The idea is Austin's not been involved in the storyline in a long time. Him and Lesnar in the ring is something that people would quite like to see, even if it is just him as a referee. What do you think about Steve Austin being the referee for the match?
I would rather see that, because I just sort of feel like Austin hasn't been involved for a long time. But again, that's almost sending a message that you should not broadcast. It's like, oh, if Austin's in, is he going to make that comeback? It's like, I think people have finally now accepted that Austin is not going to wrestle again and wrestled since 2003. People have now accepted that. So by inserting him in the match, it then sort of creates those expectations which are never going to be fulfilled. And again, it sort of overshadows the two guys. But you could, you know, the argument to that, Kenny, is this match is so uninspiring. It's such like, why is this match even occurring? Well, it's happening because apparently Survivor Series, the only time of the year, Kenny, you know, that Raw and SmackDown wrestlers, you know, compete against each other, apart from, of course, Raw Rumble and, oh, yeah, TLC when we had AJ Styles versus Finn Balor and all those other events that it takes place on. So it's you sort of think, well, you need that special referee to make this match more appealing. But if the special referee overshadows both of the guys in the match, then you've sort of done the wrestlers a disservice, if that's possible, with Jinder Mahal and Brock Lesnar as well. So I don't know. On one hand, I suppose I can understand why people would be excited by it. But on the other hand, to me, it would almost do more harm than good.
So those are the two options that you have. There is one more. The other option that they have as the guest referee for Jinder Mahal and Brock Lesnar is John Cena.
Well, you're not expecting this. I actually think that Cena would be the best choice of the three.
Fuck off. This is a swerve.
No, absolutely. The reason being that I don't want to see John Cena and Jinder Mahal wrestle again, because we've just seen that. Well, we're probably going to see it again at WrestleMania 34, since Jinder has already issued that challenge. Maybe it's to set that up. But at least a Cena versus Lesnar match could happen. I don't really have any great interest in watching that match again either, but at least it's feasible. At least it could happen. So it gets people fantasy booking, which to me is one of the things that wrestling fans really love to do. And we're not, I don't think we're given enough food for thought in that area. So that there would create some fantasy booking scenarios that could actually happen, Kenny. So Cena is my pick of the three.
I'm just baffled. I just never thought this day would come.
As I said earlier about the Ronda Rousey thing, it's great that she's coming in, but hopefully it sets something up for the future, because we always go into that post-WrestleMania lull. And I always like it when they set stuff up. And, you know, you go back to, I know what people talk about 1998, and people are probably bored of that, right? But I'm just going to keep this brief. You go back to WrestleMania 14, Steve Austin defeats Shawn Michaels, becomes champ. We didn't have a post-WrestleMania lull then, did we, Kenny? We had this incredible Austin McMahon feud that started the very next night. So we had all these incredible things happening.
The difference then was, like, every pay-per-view was promoted as an equal level. WrestleMania, even though WrestleMania had, like, a video package with more lineage in it, all the other pay-per-views had, like, there was never a pay-per-view in, like, 98 where they, like, gave you a second-class match. It was all main event, main event, main event. You know, Austin, Foley, Undertaker, Kane, Austin, Undertaker. It was always big, big, big matches on pay-per-views, and stuff happened on them as well, so...
Yeah, that is true. That's true, yeah. I mean, WrestleMania and SummerSlam were the two big events that year. They both did the best numbers of the year on pay-per-view. I mean, Austin, Undertaker was promoted really well with a Highway to Hell storyline, and they even got the rights to use the AC/DC song. I remember that being huge, that match. But, I mean, it was like, you're right in a sense that WrestleMania wasn't a huge show then that it is now, where it's so much bigger than every other show. But my point is that after WrestleMania, we didn't go, WrestleMania, we're not going to see that for another year. What now? You had all these other things lined up that were terrific, you know, that were just, you had to tune in to see. You know, Raw at that point was unmissable because you were tuning in each week for the next installment in the McMahon versus Austin saga. So with Cena as referee, it sets stuff up either with Jinder or with Lesnar. And that's, to me, what a big match should do. It should set something else up until it reaches its conclusion.
Is this the turning point? Is this going to be the thing that maybe finally gets you into the C Nation? Is this the beginning of it?
Well, it could be it. I mean, the thing is, if Cena is the one to dethrone Mahal, that's it. All sins forgiven, Kenny. If you want to know what I really think about that, check out some other website, finleymartin.co.uk.
Please do go to finleymartin.co.uk. There's a very, very entertaining article on Jinder, and his title reign, we've just reached 5 months, good God. So, yeah, do check that out. So, talk to me about the invasion angle at the end of Raw. I actually quite liked it. I seem to be in the minority of people that I speak to, but I enjoyed it. I'm kind of, like, willing to let it play out before I completely sort of, like, judge it, but I don't believe you were a big fan of it.
No, I just want to say that I really enjoyed the opening match on Raw. That was terrific, really enjoyable. I think, you know, anyone would enjoy that. Just want to also mention the Kane-Finn Balor match. I don't think Finn Balor was buried in that match, but it was still a disappointment to see him lose after delivering such an explosive match with AJ Styles, which he won the night before. So, and which is, of course, all leading to another Kane push, which will then inevitably set up a Kane versus Strowman match. So I don't like seeing Finn Balor used as a setup guy for Kane at this point in his career. But everything in WWE is on such a short cycle that, you know, probably next week Finn will be getting the push again, and his loss to Kane will probably never be acknowledged again. So maybe in the long term it won't matter. But just on the night, I didn't like seeing that. As for the Under Siege, not the invasion, Kenny. We couldn't use word invasion, could we?
No, you can't use that at all. You can't use that at all. But what I did love was during it, Booker T was like, "I've never seen anything more crazy in my 26 years. You fucking invaded with WCW, you daft prick."
Yeah, he was the one who led it. He ran in on Raw the night after King of the Ring in 2001 and attacked Vince McMahon in the hallowed grounds of Madison Square Garden. So for Booker T to say never seen anything like it in his 26 years can only be described as complete and total bollocks. So that's my opinion on that.
I would concur.
But as far as the invasion, it was I mean, the Raw team just sort of seemed to fall down like Skittles. They just didn't seem to offer that much resistance, which was sort of disappointing. But, you know, the storyline is, it's an ongoing storyline. I'm sure they will get their revenge. That was something that was stressed at the end of SmackDown this week by Daniel Bryan to Shane McMahon at the end of SmackDown, saying, oh, Raw, you know, the Raw team didn't invade SmackDown tonight, but they will. So that was like the teaser for a future episode. So presumably Raw is going to get its revenge. You know, you can tear holes in it, Kenny. You know, you've got Baron Corbin there as a heel who doesn't like anyone, leading the team. You've got Rusev there as a heel with all these baby faces. And suddenly, you know, the blue colours just then mean that all feuds on the SmackDown brand don't matter. It was, as you know, it's as if suddenly SmackDown's in this alternative universe. The SmackDown storylines are in this alternative universe, and because the SmackDown wrestlers on Raw, none of that counts. So that was.
I do think though that, like, I know they've not explained it yet, but my whole thing is, I think there is a good argument for SmackDown for why they all did it, because if you look at it, you know, the big pay-per-views of the year, WrestleMania and SummerSlam, it's been Raw that's got the main events. Raw gets more attention. Raw is, you know, Raw got Jason Jordan. They didn't get anything back. SmackDown didn't get anything back. They gave AJ Styles over. Raw never offered anything back. There's a way to tell the story, I think, that SmackDown feels like it's not getting the credit that it deserves. But they do need to tell that story before people are, you know, you can't just expect people to create the stories themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's they do need to really lay that on thick, and I just didn't really feel like the follow up on SmackDown was strong at all. I mean, I felt that was weak. If it turns into something much better, then I didn't really like it, Kenny. I didn't like it at all. I was watching it and just watching all these guys and all these women just being destroyed by SmackDown, and they didn't, you know, they were just okay. They were overwhelmed by superior forces. But the Raw roster just looks so weak. And I guess a real show of force when they invade SmackDown will sort of undo that and bring us back to where we were before this happened.
What could they do? The thing is, because I've said that I enjoyed it and why I enjoyed it, so that's kind of like, you know, old ground for me to go over. So for you as someone who didn't enjoy it and didn't think it was compelling TV, what could they do in the storyline to make you more invested in it going forward?
The problem was it just felt so contrived and so, like, thrown out there. It's like, okay, we've got the Survivor Series next month. I mean, Kurt Angle comes out there and just nonchalantly, that was the word I was searching for before, nonchalantly announces all these Raw versus SmackDown matches at Survivor Series, which, from what I understand, Kenny, correct me if I'm wrong here, are non-title matches.
They are all non-title matches, yeah.
Yeah, that's from what I understand. So, presumably, it's going to be an even Stevens thing where Raw will win one, SmackDown will win the other, and it'll be, you know, we'll have to have some sort of parity there, you know. So why are the matches really happening? Who really cares about Baron Corbin versus The Miz? How are they really going to sell that when you've got two obnoxious heels? I'm not really sure how they're going to sell that match. I'm not really that interested in seeing it. And
do you think if they add some stakes to what's going on?
They could do that, but we haven't seen that yet.
And no, that's what I'm saying. Do you think if they did add stakes, it would make the story better?
Well, yeah. I mean, remember when they had that bragging rights pay-per-view?
Oh, fuck.
I guess, yeah. You know, where they were like vying for a big trophy.
The month before Survivor Series.
Yeah, and that was just then never mentioned again. It's like, oh, so Raw won this big trophy, and where does that take us? Oh, normal service resumes on the very next night on Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah.
You're right. What is at stake at SmackDown?
I mean, the best thing I've heard as a suggestion is that they do something where it's like all the matches, it's like a scorecard for the night between Raw and SmackDown. And the winning team gets numbers 16 to 30 in the Rumble. The loser gets 1 to 15.
Well, they can't really do that because the whole selling point of the Rumble is that names are drawn at random, apart from somebody will, somebody will be punished and have to go out first, and somebody in a storyline will go out at number 30. So part of the selling point of the Rumble is that it's supposed to be at random, isn't it? It's not supposed to be predetermined, even though, of course, we know it is, but it's not supposed to be all laid out in advance. So I'm not really sure, I mean, what they can do. And I don't really have any faith in them delivering it long term anyway, because so many storylines just sort of, you know, the big selling point of TLC, or the voiceover man was saying there, what was it? Every great story has a beginning, middle, and end. I thought that was quite ironic that the voiceover man was using that on a WWE show. This company, these stories generally have a beginning, sometimes have a middle, and just sort of peter out. So I'm not sure how they can really make this more appealing, because it just sort of, it just feels like, it's almost like that Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. I mean, it wasn't so bad this year, because the Shane McMahon, Kevin Owens match, it did sort of have a reason for them to be in the cell. But there have been Hell in a Cell events in the past, Kenny, you know this, where Hell in a Cell matches have happened really for no reason other than that is the name of the pay-per-view.
Roman Reigns and Rusev, yeah.
Yeah, so, right, we've got to have a Hell in a Cell match. Well, why? This was invented, I can mention this now because you've got past it on the Retro Raw podcast. This was invented for the Shawn Michaels and Undertaker match at Bad Blood after they'd had a match at Unforgiven, was it the previous month?
Ground Zero,
yeah, In Your House Ground Zero. They'd had the match the previous month there where they'd brawled all over the place, so they had to put them in a cell to contain the match. That was the whole idea of Hell in a Cell, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and it made sense. It's like Jim Cornette would say, well, somebody said it was like, it's not a match that needs a cell, it's a cell that needs a match.
Exactly. So this match is happening. That was the whole purpose of the cage match originally, is that it was the feud ender. And it was a massive draw when used correctly in the old days, and still can be effective to this day now. But getting back to Survivor Series, it just feels like, right, we've got Survivor Series. What are we going to do for Survivor Series? I know, let's just do all these matches between Raw and SmackDown, and that'll sell it. It's like, that's the level of imagination that's gone into it thus far. So I would like to see there being things at stake. Obviously, we know the titles aren't going to be in stake, which kind of makes the matches point. You know, Baron Corbin is after Survivor Series. Baron Corbin's going to be on SmackDown. Miz is going to be on Raw. And it's like they're just then going to be going about their business on the separate brands with wrestlers who are attached to their brand. So it's hard to believe that the match is going to take either of them anywhere, if you see what I mean. So it's almost like these matches are just so manufactured and so just, let's do this because we've got yet another pay-per-view. We don't have any fresh ideas, so we'll do Raw versus SmackDown. So it just feels to me to be a very lazy pay-per-view, once again. Like, there hasn't really been too much thought put into it. And it's like, well, this will sell. People will watch this. We'll tell them it's the only time of year that these guys wrestle each other, even though they wrestle each other on other shows. Because we'll just pretend that's true. I'm just not really excited about Survivor Series at all. I mean, I hope that they can insert some reasons to make me excited, Kenny, but I'm not really holding out much hope, if I'm honest with you.
What about SmackDown? Talk to me about SmackDown Live. How did that show do this week, and what were your parts that you think were noteworthy to talk about?
There seemed to be a lot of replays on the show. I mean, it's like watching an episode of Impact, which is like nearly all replays. You know, I felt that opening segment with Shane McMahon and Sami Zayn, because of what had happened the night before, it sort of ruined it. Because what Shane had done on Raw was far more heelish than what Sami Zayn had done at Hell in a Cell. It felt like the whole babyface heel dynamic was just a mess. Was just torpedoed by what had occurred the night before. I think some people in the audience were having a hard time. Is Shane a heel? Is he a babyface? Didn't quite know how to react to him. He was playing babyface on the night. Then Zayn came out, and the whole thing just felt very anticlimactic. That should have been a huge moment, but mostly because what had happened the night before on Raw, I think people were struggling there, Kenny. I think they were struggling to know who to cheer for and who to boo. And Zayn's character is quite subtle, isn't he? As a heel, he's quite a subtle heel, which is appealing. It's different. I'm interested to see where it all goes. Fortunately, on SmackDown this week, it led to him losing to Randy Orton. At least Randy Orton had to use a low blow before he beat Sami Zayn.
I like back to last week. I actually think the more interesting story for me is like, you know, Shane's doing this thing, which I think he does need to give more reasoning as to why it was so, you know, intense what he did to Raw or what SmackDown did to Raw. But I think almost the more interesting story is if Sami and Kevin Owens aren't on his team, and then they end up probably costing SmackDown the match because they don't really care about SmackDown. They just care about themselves. You know, they care about themselves being, you know, the stars of the team. And, you know, that's what I liked about Sami Zayn. That's what he's saying. Okay, you know, we'll burden the load as always. But they're not doing it because they love SmackDown. They're doing it because they just want to be the center of attention. Yeah. And if they lose, then I think that's more interesting getting into Survivor. I think it's more interesting getting into Survivor Series with Sami and Kevin not being in the team and what could happen with that, rather than them being a part of the team, which I think muddles even more the Sami and Kevin Owen against Shane thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, that could well be the outcome. I mean, Randy Orton, as we know, is going to be part of the team at Survivor Series. He's going to be part of Team SmackDown. Zayn's not going to be on Team SmackDown because that was at stake in the Orton versus Zayn match in the main event of SmackDown. Next week, it's going to be Kevin Owens versus Shinsuke Nakamura, and the winner will be part of Team SmackDown. So you can kind of see Owens losing that match, can't you? Setting up that.
Yeah, it feels like either both of them are going to be in the team or neither of them are going to be in the team.
That's right.
I do like the storyline. The two things I liked in the open promo, I liked Shane sort of talking about, you know, we had a man on the inside with AJ Styles, you know, so like, you know, that was our in, by, you know, pretend that he was, you know, yeah, have him for an extra night or whatever. But then I did like that Sami wasn't just wanting to be a part of the team, because why would that make any sense? Whereas him sort of reluctantly pretend that he'd be doing Shane a favour so that he could be the centre of attention, I think was a better way to play it.
Yeah. I like the Zayn character. It's subtle, and it's totally different to anything in there. And I hope they persevere with it and really give it the creative attention it deserves. I think people are still trying to work out what's going on. It is a real subtle character, and he's sort of coming out playing a baby face and dancing around and doing that, which is supposed to be a heat-seeking thing, but because Zayn is quite a likeable guy, he's not really getting that much heat there for the character. But I think this is something that can develop. I think it's something that can happen at a later date, but he's got to do really awful things to get that heat. And once he starts doing those really villainous things, people will boo him even more for smiling and sort of almost pretending to be a babyface, and maybe costing Team SmackDown the match at Survivor Series will be the thing that will really tip people over the edge and get them to really boo him. So that could well be it, Kenny. Yeah.
That could be it, yeah.
That could well be it. So but, you know, I suppose you've got to, I could complain and say, well, yeah, Shane, and it kind of screwed up the Shane-Sammy thing, but maybe, you know, I'm lingering too much on that and I should really be practicing what I preach here, Kenny, and looking ahead and looking to the future and looking to what this sets up rather than what it's potentially spoiled. So maybe I need to, you know, take a dose of my own medicine here, Kenny, and start looking to the future and saying, yay, this is terrific.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt that there's a few, like Baron Corbin losing to Sin Cara again. It was like, and then after the match, Corbin was DQ'd for pummeling Cara. After the match, he nailed Cara with End of Days at ringside, and fans chanted one more time. I mean, Sin Cara could be the worst babyface in the company. Could be the most useless babyface in wrestling right now.
Well, yeah, he could be. He could be. there are many to choose from, but he could be. I heard an interesting theory that I want to just quickly put out there. It was, I'm not saying it's the best idea, but maybe not the worst, is are they planting seeds for a Daniel Bryan heel turn? Because you had Sami and Kevin doing that promo on him the other week. There's now the stuff with Shane and Bryan not getting on. You know, if he's leaving next year, they maybe want to cool him off a little bit. I think it'll backfire, because I think people will, you know, the idea of Sami, Kevin and Bryan together as a little group, I think people would just go crazy for it. No matter whether you position him as heels or babyface. But I am intrigued by the Shane and Bryan stuff, especially with Bryan I mean, I don't know how you get him to be a heel, because it seems like he's the voice of reason.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
But I like the idea that maybe there's some dissension and what could play out.
Yeah, hopefully that'll go somewhere. Daniel Bryan let Shane McMahon know that he wasn't happy about the, not the invasion, the under siege. And Shane's like, well, you know, this is what I'm doing. And Bryan's letting him know, well, I'm letting you know what my stance on this is. So that was quite interesting. Who knows where that's going to go? Hopefully somewhere. Jinder did his promo on Heyman. He had his response to the Heyman promo. He called him a used car salesman. I felt that was should have been Jinder's big moment, this promo, Kenny, and I don't think he really delivered.
I think he had some funny lines and whatever, but like not a main event promo.
No. Oh, I mean, this is the moment where Jinder, if he's got it, and I don't believe he has, if he's got it, he was going to show it here. He should have really been... He just sort of comes across as a cartoon character, you know? He just doesn't project any menace. He's that sort of typical WWE sort of lightweight sort of character that seems to be reciting lines that have been written for him, which, we know they are doing that. But by the same token, every character in every TV program or film is also reading from a script or lines they've memorized. And they can make it seem real. So I've heard that a lot. People say, oh, well, you know, they shouldn't be doing this. You should write their own promos. Because if they do that, then they'll be unique to them and personalized to them. If you think about it, Kenny, in all films, people are reading lines that have been written for them. But they can make it seem like they really mean it, can't they?
Yeah, it's, I think that's the test of separating the people who can do it well from who can't, is how you can make those lines. I mean, like, it's like The Miz. The Miz never makes me feel like he's reciting lines.
Absolutely agreed. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely spot on there with that observation. Yeah, he delivers them with such intensity. And I really felt that was what Jinder should have brought. This was his moment to really shine and to really show that, you know, he's a serious threat and that he's a serious performer. And he just came across as just a, I mean, the, you know, the second, third match guy that he is. So I just didn't project any of that sort of main event aura that if he had it, now is the time to show it. I just dread to think what's going to happen in that Survivor Series match. You know, I felt also the AJ Styles versus Sunil Singh match that lasted 34 seconds. By my reckoning, Kenny.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, Styles won with the calf crusher in 34 seconds. That's now set up a match with
Samir
next week. That's right. I would have liked to see Sunil receive at least a bit of offense. Could have been done after distraction at ringside or anything. I would have liked that match to go longer. I felt that was a real missed opportunity there. The Singh brothers, I think, could be an act that could be something in this company. I think they've got quite a bit of personality, and I don't think any of it's really been exploited yet. So
I think they'll be the stars of this act coming out of it.
Yeah, quite possibly. But I really felt like that was a match in which, you know, if you'd only had 2 or 3 minutes and got some offense, I really was really looking forward to that match. Delivering a hell of a lot more than he did. So I was very disappointed by that. Hopefully the match next week, they'll give us 2 or 3 minutes of action. Presumably Jinder will be involved in that.
With such a thrilling voice.
Yeah, well, he was thrown out, wasn't he, before the match began.
He was.
So I thought that was a big disappointment. But perhaps, you know, I don't know whether this was the low point of SmackDown. It probably wasn't. Was the news that next week we're going to have Dolph Ziggler versus Bobby Roode in a best of 3 falls match.
Oh, God.
At least it's not an Iron Man match, Kenny.
Yet. SmackDown next week should be pretty good. There's Bobby Roode and Ziggler for the chance to be in the Survivor Series team. It better not be Ziggler. It better not be Ziggler.
Becky Lynch, she's going to be the captain of the SmackDown Women's team at Survivor Series. So, you know, I really feel like she's done very little this year. I'm a big fan of Becky Lynch. I think she's a really good character. I think she'd be so much more interesting as a heel. I thought she was a really good heel in NXT. So I'm hoping this goes somewhere for her. Hope this is the start of something exciting. You know, it's certainly. And what did you make of Alicia Fox becoming the captain of the Raw women's team on Raw. Kenny, what did you make of that?
I kind of loved it because she's batshit crazy and it's quite funny. So I kind of like, I mean, I think she's more interesting as a captain than the other two.
And what about that Northern Lights suplex, Kenny? It's got to be the best in the business.
It's definitely up there. It's definitely, of all the Northern Lights suplexes I've ever seen. But I think, I mean, Bobby Roode better go through next week on SmackDown. They've also got Owens and Nakamura for a spot, and then they've got AJ and Samir. Raw, I guess we're going to kind of get the fallout from...
Hang on, you forgot about Stranger Things.
Oh, Fashion Dogs was like my favourite one so far, and I can only imagine that Stranger Things might top it, so I'm very excited about that. Raw, I guess we're going to see Kurt Angle sort of like retaliating in some way against SmackDown. I guess we'll find out if Roman's back. For now, that's pretty much all we've got time for.
Do you think Kurt Angle and Shane McMahon might lead the teams at Survivor Series? Could that happen?
I think they'll be in the corner of the teams, but not in the match.
Okay.
Only because, like, when you look at the SmackDown team, but then it depends. Maybe Kurt and Shane will be in the match. I think it might depend on Roman. I think if Roman's out, Kurt's in.
I would agree.
If you're off for a month with the mumps, I think you're taking the piss, to be honest. I'd be doing a home test. I think he's just on the couch watching Netflix, drinking tea with his daughter. But next week we're introducing a new thing where obviously you get the Power Slam podcast on Patreon 24 hours before, but we very rarely get to talk about everything that we want to talk about, so we're going to introduce a very, very short, kind of 10, maybe 15 minute Power Slam overrun, which is going to be exclusively on Patreon as well. So that will be there. A couple of things we didn't get a chance to talk about this week will be on that overrun next week, about like the WWE maybe getting a deal with ITV in the UK for a King of the Ring show. Finn's been watching Impact with some kind of happenings to fill us in and what the fuck's going on over there. But Finn, if people want to go and read your article on Jinder Mahal and his awful title reign, or want to just say hello, where can they go?
They can read the article on our website, which is www.finleymartin.co.uk. You can follow me on Twitter at @finleymartin or at @powerslamonline. And where can people find you, Kenny?
You can find me on Twitter at KennyMC1985. You can find Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Or you can also go to Patreon for bonus content, Power Slam podcast early, pay-per-view reviews, retro pay-per-view reviews, and tons more at patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Or you can go to insidetheropes.co.uk and get tickets for all of our upcoming events. Shawn Michaels, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall. I'm sure we'll have Virgil one day if we can afford him, but not right now. Finn, thank you very much as always for being a part of the show.
Thank you, Kenny. Thank you for carrying me as you always do.
Oh, you're too kind. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week and enjoy your weekend. See you soon.
Bye. If I'd be tonight, if I'd be sad tonight.